WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. During the Civil Rights Movement, there was a strong alliance between blacks and Jews, based in part on a shared understanding of discrimination and shared liberal politics. But that alliance seems to have broken apart. Cornel West and Michael Lerner have an ongoing private and public dialogue on relations between African Americans and Jews. They collaborated on the new book, Jews and Blacks, Let the Healing Begin. West is the author of the bestseller Race Matters and a professor of Afro-American Studies at Harvard. Lerner is the editor of Tikkun, a magazine of Jewish political and social commentary. After their new book was published, they went on a speaking tour together with stops at synagogues, churches, schools, and universities. Their question and answer session with students at Howard University was shown on C-SPAN. The alliance from the civil rights movement days seemed distant and slightly irrelevant to some of the students. I asked West and Lerner if any of the students' questions surprised or disturbed them. West spoke first.
Throughout the tour, there were many who said to me, look, Brother West, we're trying to heal ourselves. We must heal within the black community first and in no way go outside of the black community. Don't you know we can't trust anybody? We're in the world by ourselves, that the larger white majority hates us, and the Jews are part of that white majority, and therefore for you to call for an alliance in a way is self-destructive, and that we did hear that oftentimes. And I do, in fact, take it quite seriously in terms of the need for self-empowerment, self-love, self-respect, self-healing within the black community. I'm just convinced that that activity must go on alongside and will be empowered by the healing of blacks and whites, blacks and Jews, blacks and browns, blacks and yellows, blacks and red.
Let me tell you an impression I got from the Howard Q&A, and I didn't see the whole session, so I might be making a false conclusion. But the impression I got from the African-American students was, listen, the whole idea of a black-Jewish alliance and the state of that alliance might be important to you, but, you know, it just really doesn't matter to me. And it's just not an issue to me.
Well, that's part of the inward-looking perspective that I was talking about. But again, that was put forward only by a small number of students. I mean, so many of the students were asking general questions about what possibilities were there and how do we understand the relation between past and present in this regard. But it's true that there is an inward-looking perspective that's quite strong in black America, and understandably so, given the fact that black folk have been isolated and targeted in such a vicious and pernicious way. But I don't think that the dominant orientation among the young people was one of the alliance makes absolutely no difference at all. They were just curious about the possibility of it, that's all.
I had some different impressions. I don't know if you want to hear them, Terry.
Yeah, I do want to hear them.
Yeah, I was very disturbed by things that happened at Howard, even though I agree with Cornell that the majority of students did not support those questions. And I had the same experience a few days ago in Los Angeles at a we went to an African-American bookstore in which I was the only non-African-American in the crowd. And again, I felt like the level of anger and hostility coming at me was so shook me that I think for about 2 hours afterwards, I could barely say a word to Cornell. I mean, I was just so upset with it. There have been other places, a group of Nation of Islam people who marched into the MIT auditorium where we were speaking Monday night in kind of military formation. And then when asked a fairly hostile question and when Cornell tried to answer it, they said, we don't want you to be providing a buffer for this guy. Let him speak. The question is to him, not to you, trying to say blacks and Jews shouldn't be together in that way. And I was upset with many of the questions. I was upset with that question that implied that what's the point of having a black-Jewish alliance? But I was also upset in many of the questions I received at other places with people suggesting, for example, that, oh, the Jews had never been in slavery, so we had stolen this this whole notion, and that we were lying, our religion was based on lies, and that the Jews ran Hollywood, and the Jews had all the wealth and power in American society, over and over again, one anti-Semitic canard after another that I was hearing. However, I do have to say also, Terry, that I was hearing that from a distinguishable small sector of the population. And we had an experience in L.A. with, that was in the L.A. bookstore was with about 40 people. But we had an experience in L.A. with a House of Blues, a big jazz club that was packed with about 800 people, 400 of whom were African-Americans, most of them between the ages of 20 and 40. And they were so enthusiastic about this and so excited about the possibility of a connection. And the vast majority of people, not just the kinds that you'd expect from churches and sort of older or more conservative folks, but young African Americans, the vast majority of them expressing enthusiasm about the possibility of a Black Jewish alliance was really surprising to me also. So I had both the surprise of the negativity and the upset around that and the surprise of the positivity, which I also didn't expect.
Now, I want to say that the House of Blues audience each had to pay $22.50 a ticket, and that might have affected who showed up, in the sense that usually when you're paying for something, it's something you really already support and agree with.
Well, they a lot of them had come to pay also for the there was a Watts rap group that was going to be playing afterwards, and and they paid to come to that, and they came early to hear us.
I see.
And so it was the Watts crowd that had that was quite surprising, because they I knew that they were the Watts crowd because they weren't there at 7 when we started. They came in around 8 o'clock, and then they stayed for about an hour of our interaction. And in that hour of interaction, they moved from sort of passively standing in the back drinking at the bars there to actively engaging and being excited about what they were hearing.
My guests are Michael Lerner and Cornel West. They've co-written the new book, Jews and Blacks, Let the Healing Begin. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Michael Lerner and Cornel West, co-authors of Jews and Blacks. I would imagine that one source of probing questions that you each got had to do with the Nation of Islam.
And Farrakhan.
And
here we disagree, as you probably know from reading the book.
Mm-hmm. Tell me where you disagree on the meaning of, on the place of the Nation of Islam within American political discourse now.
Well, from my standpoint, the Nation of Islam is an overtly racist and anti-Semitic and not to mention sexist and homophobic organization. And it puts out material. In its bookstore, it supports things like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion and other classic anti-Semitic texts. And in its statements, in particular the statements of Louis Farrakhan, but other people as well who come out of that tradition, they make statements that are overtly anti-Semitic and disgusting. And so I was very critical of the NAACP inviting Louis Farrakhan to a national leadership summit that was constituted by the by them this past June. And and this was at the end of 5.5 years of us doing this dialogue. Cornell went to that as one of the leaders who was invited. I was outside organizing a picket, a demonstration against that. So we clearly had a very strong disagreement. And on the one hand, I want to say that a part of our message in this dialogue is that one can disagree in this way, that one doesn't have to impose a political correctness on the other community and say, you have to agree with us on all points, in order to affirm the fundamental unity of purpose and direction between these two communities. But on the other hand, I really disagreed with what was happening there. I think that sometimes people minimize Farrakhan and say, oh, he doesn't have that big a constituency, he's not that important. Then on the other hand, here they are inviting him to the National Leadership Summit and saying he is one of the national leaders. And I think they can't have it both ways. And so I am very disturbed by that. And shortly thereafter, after this whole event, organization's newspaper, the Nation of Islam's newspaper, issued a new teaching by Farrakhan in which he focused specifically on the role of Jews in killing Jesus. Now, this is being raised in 1994, right? This is not about gutter religion, what he said 10 years ago. He's saying in 1994, he issues this statement about how the Jews were responsible for the death of Jesus, and the entire teaching was about that. And what he said in it was that the Jewish people are collectively responsible for the killing of Jesus. So he is raising the thing that has been used against us for 2,000 years as one of the main ways to incite people to hate us. And this is outrageous and unacceptable. And I think that I'm calling on African Americans to repudiate him unequivocally and strongly and consistently until he moves away from this kind of overt anti-Semitism.
Well, Cornel West, what's your reaction to Michael Lerner's call that African Americans should repudiate unequivocally Farrakhan's treatment of Jewish people?
Well, I mean, part of it hangs on what he means by that. If he means that one must bring serious moral critique to bear on anti-Jewish and anti-Semitic language, rhetoric, and action, he's absolutely right. If he means one ought to in no way engage the Nation of Islam or no way engage Mensah Louis Farrakhan, I disagree with him. There's no doubt that Mensah Louis Farrakhan has made anti-Semitic statements and rhetoric. He's caused Jewish pain. There's no doubt about that. At the same time, I unequivocally oppose the demonization of Mensah Louis Farrakhan or anybody else to situate them outside of the human race, to act as if he is a Hitler and therefore a devil and a demon. That strikes me as not just trumping conversation, but it impedes the kind of engagement necessary, especially in the black community, when you have someone who is influential. It's true, numerically speaking, that the National Organization of Nation of Islam is roughly equivalent to the three biggest Baptist churches in Brooklyn in terms of numbers. But he is influential, and therefore there's a struggle going on in the black community for the hearts and minds and souls of black people, especially young black people. So you have to be able to engage, and you engage by means of not simply highlighting his rhetoric as it relates to Jews, but also highlighting his major focus, which is black suffering. And because black suffering has been rendered invisible in America for the most part, you miss much of Minister Louis Farrakhan if all you see is simply his anti-Semitic rhetoric and do not see his focus on black suffering and do not see what is perceived in the eyes of many people, namely his deep love for black folk and his willingness to be bold and defiant vis-a-vis a black power structure. The challenge is going to be, how do we speak to the black suffering? How do we accent the black love and the need for black self-respect, and then in no way associated with anti-Semitic or patriarchal or homophobic language.
Michael, what do you say to Cornel West's idea that Farrakhan speaks to African-American suffering and he should be engaged in dialogue, not demonized?
Well, I'm sure he does speak to African-American suffering, but I've often said that many racists in the United States spoke to the pain and poverty of white Americans. That wasn't sufficient to excuse their racism towards African Americans. And
we're not talking about excusing. We're talking about engaging.
Well, yes, and here I'm all for you engaging privately with this guy. I'm against you giving him, acknowledging him as a leader when he is inviting him to sit down as part of a leadership conference. When this guy is hurting us and spreading this vicious anti-Semitism against us. Now, I had the same position with vis-a-vis our own racists. In other words, we in the liberal Jewish world, Tikkun magazine organized a demonstration against Meir Kahana, who is the rabbi who had racist ideas against the Palestinians and against American blacks. And we would not allow that kind of racism in our own community. We're not holding blacks to a different or higher standard than we hold ourselves. And I was very proud of Israel when Israel threw him out of the Knesset and then passed a law banning any racist party from running for Knesset. I think that that's the appropriate way you deal with overt racists who are unapologetic in their demeaning of others.
Cornel West?
Yeah, see, I would argue that there's a number of different strategies here. You see, if I did not engage in dialogue with homophobes, with those with patriarchal sensibility or white supremacists, I would not engage too many people, so that the question becomes, how do you engage with people in light of what you perceive to be their xenophobic sensibility or language, you see? And for me, anti-Semitism is one particular form of vicious bigotry. And I've continually engaged with homophobes, continually engaged with white supremacists, continually engaged with those with patriarchal sensibilities. The question is whether I'm going to be upfront about my own critiques of those forms, even as I try to move them in certain directions.
My guests are Cornel West and Michael Lerner. They collaborated on the new book, Jews and Blacks. We'll continue our conversation in a minute. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Cornel West and Michael Lerner. They collaborated on the new book, Jews and Blacks. Let me tell you something that I think I sometimes hear on the subject of Jewish-African-American relations is addressed, and that is the question of, well, who's been more oppressed? Is the Holocaust the equivalent of the hundreds of years of slavery that African-Americans faced? Which group of people has faced more hardship over the centuries? Is that something that you think the dialogue gets too hung up on?
Oh, very, very much so. And we did see this many times on the tour. But I think it has much to do with the fact that in the last 20 or 25 years, Jewish suffering, especially in the 20th century, as ugly and indescribable as it has been, has in fact received a visibility and a saliency that black suffering has not. And so what you often find is persons deeply concerned about, okay, a Holocaust monument in Washington, D.C., or news coverage of the Holocaust, the genocidal attacks of Nazis vis-a-vis Jewish brothers and sisters, talked about a lot of focus on it. And at the same time, America still in denial about 244 years of slavery or the indescribable cruelties and atrocities of the transatlantic slave trade. So it's not simply engaging in this algebra of blood, as Camus called it, but it's acknowledgement that Jewish suffering in the 20th century has received a validation and a legitimacy in terms of its visibility, that black suffering in America, for the most part, has not, because America remains in a state of denial about its vicious treatment of black folk. And I think that's true for indigenous peoples as well.
Michael Lerner, what's your reaction?
One out of every three Jews alive in the 20th century was murdered. So I wouldn't say that the visibility we got was disproportionate to the outrage. But
that wasn't the claim. The claim was vis-a-vis the history of slavery in America. So.
Right. Yeah. It's certainly true that there hasn't been enough attention paid to the ongoing legacy of slavery and oppression of African Americans. But here, I do think that there's a tremendous problem that comes out of both of our communities. And we love to sing the song, "Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen." Both of our communities know how to sing that song and to say, hey, our suffering is more unique and different than everybody else's. But the problem is that insofar as we've been interested in trying to change the situation in the world, and these are the two communities that are the backbone of the liberal and progressive social change movements in America, the African Americans and Jews, insofar as we wanted to change the situation, we've put out a message that I think has been very destructive and has undermined the liberal and progressive forces. And that message has been that there is a hierarchy of oppression, and that if you want to be part of a progressive social change movement, you've got to first acknowledge that your pain is less than our pain. And that kind of way of orienting towards others, I think, has been extremely alienating and has pushed people away. And part of what Cornel and I came to in the dialogue was realizing that a campaign against anti-Semitism in the black community and racism in the Jewish community wasn't enough, that what we needed to do was to bring, in order to heal the pain between these two communities, we needed to address the larger dynamics and problems in American society as a whole, and to turn to many Americans who are suffering from the ethos of materialism and selfishness in this society, and talk about the deprivation of meaning that is central to the pain that middle-income white people face in this society. All too often, the liberal and progressive forces have said the only real pain is economic deprivation or denial of political rights. But so many people who are facing the breakdown of families, the isolation that comes from living in a world in which everybody seems to be out for themselves, the sense that there are no values in the society, the ethical and spiritual crisis that the right has successfully addressed that affects so many white middle-income people, this is a real oppression that up till now, liberal and progressive forces haven't addressed.
I'd like to end by asking you each to tell us what left you most hopeful from your tour?
For me, what was most hopeful was the response that so many African-American young people gave to the possibility of a Black-Jewish alliance, and particularly to the part of the alliance where we talked about bringing these two communities together to challenge the ethos of materialism and selfishness in American society. That was extraordinary, and I felt like there was the energy in many of the rooms that we spoke in for a real campaign for a change in American politics.
Cornel West, we have about 40 seconds.
What was most hopeful was we got an enactment of democratic practice so that you had two fellow citizens who cared about one another, loved one another, engaged in deep disagreement, but much deeper agreement, so that we could take one another seriously and give each other the benefit of being wrong as well as right. And yet, example itself, for me, is so very important in a moment of such polarization and balkanization.
In other words, that it's possible for two people to not agree on everything and yet to recognize their fundamental solidarity and unity and go forward to try and change the larger society without requiring of each other that we be 100% in agreement.
Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Terry.
Cornel West and Michael Lerner, they collaborated on the new book, Jews and Blacks, Let the Healing Begin.